Hello all, and welcome back to our three-part podcast mini-series special from Steps to Investing and our partners at Alliance Trust, where we have been focusing on the benefits of being a patient long-term investor. Throughout the series, we are speaking to a mixture of some real-life private investors, as well as a professional to touch upon different aspects of the investing experience, getting started, dealing with some of those anxieties that come with having your hard-earned cash running around in the stock markets, some strategies for investing efficiently, and ultimately, the benefits of leaving your investments to do their thing and investing for the long term. In episode 2, we are speaking to Sam Slomer, a chartered financial planner, to understand from a professional perspective why we should be investing in the stock market for the long term and how we go about dealing with some of those anxieties that may come with it. Sam, a very warm welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Sam, do you want to just start by describing a little bit about yourself and also what the role of a chartered financial planner is?
Sure. So, as I said, my name is Sam Slomer. I am the managing director of a company called Engage Financial Services, which is my business. I'm also studying at the moment for the Certified Financial Planner, which hopefully I will complete at the end of this year. What a chartered financial planner does, there's quite a lot of things. It's quite wide ranging, which is one of the reasons why it's such a fun business and industry to be in. But we generally look after families. We help them plan what to do with money, how to save, how to invest, how to be tax efficient, how to make good decisions, and ultimately how to live a life that aligns with the values, and using money to fund whatever it is they want to fund.
Okay, so it goes a bit beyond just investing in the stock markets. You're actually looking at many different aspects of people's finances and how that sort of influences how they live.
Yeah, most definitely. Investing in the stock market is sort of one of the areas that we deal with. And obviously, it's quite an important one because that's where you're actually putting clients' hard-earned money. You know, we are the custodians of family wealth, so we take that quite seriously. But investing in the stock market is one of the tools that we would use to help grow people's assets over time.
Okay, well, let's get into, you know, why investing in the stock market is so important. I mean, you know, I suppose we kind of have a couple of options with our money. We can kind of save our money, which is quite risk-free, and then we can go about taking a little bit of risk and putting it in the stock market. So why is investing in the stock market so important for wealth creation?
Well, before I come on to why it's good for wealth creation, one of the things that you need to define before you go into the stock market is the word risk. What does risk mean to you? So you just said saving is risk-free and investing adds some risk. Now, immediately I would give you some changes to those definitions of risk. When you save your money and you're getting, you know, whatever it is in your savings account, that's a fixed return. What you're not getting is are you beating or keeping up with inflation? And that's purchasing power. Now, when you invest in the stock market, there is risk that the money will go up and down because that's volatility. And yes, there will be volatility in all stock market investments. But over the long term, you've got historical empirical data that would show that it keeps up with and beats purchasing power, and that's inflation. And that's really why you invest. So you're investing so that your money grows over and above inflation. And to give you an example, I was looking at something this morning. The price of a hamburger at McDonald's in the 1970s was about 50 cents, so 50p for English people. And a hamburger today is about £1.79. So that's gone up by nearly 3.5 times over that period. And if you had your money and you had 50 cents and you could buy 50p, let's use English terms, and you wanted to buy a hamburger today, and you'd kept that money in savings and got nothing in terms of return, you wouldn't be able to purchase that same hamburger for the same amount of money. So that's really how we define it. And that's why we use the stock market as a vehicle to grow people's wealth over and above inflation and to keep above purchasing power.
So it's this idea that we're sort of getting on our savings, we're getting this negative real rate. When you look at the rate versus the rate of inflation, it is much below that. And that's why putting your money in the stock market is a good idea, because you can then hope to get a positive rate rather than a negative one.
Exactly that, yeah.
So let's move on then to time in the markets then. You know, we're told that you need to give stock market investments at least 5 years. Generally, that's the kind of rule of thumb with stock market investments because of volatility, as you mentioned. But it seems as if the longer the better. Why is this? Why is length of the time in the market so important?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's two real reasons for that. One is that in any 1 year or in any 1 5-year period, the markets can be volatile, as we mentioned before. And volatility is a fact of investing. It is the fee that you pay to invest in the stock market. It's going to go up and down. But over the longer term, the more likely the outcome of having a positive return over any longer term period. So, for example, I was doing some research in regards to this pod, and I knew the stats, but I just wanted to get them nailed on. In any 1 year period, the stock market, this is the general market, is up about 75% of the time. Over any 5 year period, it's about 88% positive return. Over 10 year, it goes up to 94%. And there has never been a rolling 20 year period where you haven't had returns. So the first reason to invest over the longer term is because you're going to have a more likely outcome of positive return, which is what you want. And the second reason is compound interest. So the compound interest effect is you earn money on the money. So again, for example, you have a pound invested, and we'll use round numbers, and you have a 10% return, that is 10p. So next year you have £1.10 invested. If you get another £1, 10% return on your £1.10, that's 11p. Now that difference of 1p sounds small, and it is small in this example. But as you grow that, you get to see the effect of earning money on your money. And it really has a powerful growth. And actually it's one of the hardest things for the human brain to calculate. And I'll give you an example. If you do 2 plus 2 plus 2 plus 2 plus 2, you know, to the power of 10 or whatever it is, you can do that calculation quite easily. If you do 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 again to the power of 10, it will be infinitely harder, and you'll see that number grow quite significantly over the same number of twos. And you can use any number there, obviously. But so that's the two reasons why you invest over the longer term. One is for the more likely outcome of positive returns. And the second is to get the compound effect on your money.
That's fascinating. So at 10 years, there's only a 6% chance that you might be in a loss. And so you'd probably have to be pretty unlucky there. But at 20 years, there's never been any point where someone has entered in the stock markets there, and then 20 years later, they've ever had a negative return.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think one of the interesting things is looking at things right now is a very interesting period to look at, because if you take, and we'll just use 2020 as a period. So from 2000 to 2020, the average stock market return over that period was about 11%, which historically is about average. But the two decades were really different. So from 2000 to 2010, they broadly call a lost decade, and there was hardly anything. And then from 2010 to 2020, there was broadly 19% return. And that is how it can work. So it's really, really difficult to time that and know when those are going to happen. But over that 20-year period, you would have got the average if you'd sat and done nothing. And that is the hard part of investing.
And then with the compounding effect, it's this idea of returns upon returns. And you sort of get this big upward sloping curve in terms of your returns the longer and longer it goes out. So the difference between your returns from 30 years relative to 20 is enormous, isn't it? And much, much larger than the difference between 20 to 10.
Yeah, again, it's huge. It's so difficult to see that. We have a calculator on our website where we have to show people, because if I tell them the numbers, they don't seem real. And it's very difficult for the human brain, as I said, to compute that, because the numbers become very large very quickly.
Okay, moving on. Just, you know, and going to your clients there, you were talking about giving them some comfort, showing them the, you know, the types of returns through those long time periods. Do you find that your clients are often quite nervous of stock market investing?
I think, yes, they are nervous. I think a lot of people like to be in control. So, you know, if they put something in a bank account and they know the rate of return, that's they're in control. If they were to buy property and they could see it and touch it and it's tangible, again, they feel in control, and they know that they've got rent coming in, and it's a perception thing. So, you know, they can talk to their friends about the property that they own, or, you know, it's having that tangibility is quite important. Whereas the stock market feels like you're handing over money to someone and they are essentially playing with it or gambling with it. So again, it is there is a nervousness around it. So it's up to us to educate our clients on what we do, and we show them track records, and we show them the differences between some of the stories they might have heard in the press and what it is we're actually doing with their money. So the nervousness usually lasts for a period of time. And then once they see how it works and they get a bit more comfortable, it becomes a bit easier for them to understand and ascertain.
Okay, interesting. So it's because it's the intangibility of these assets that they're buying, this sort of supposed ownership in companies, that they find that hard to kind of wrap their heads around a little bit. But once, you know, you sort of explain exactly how it works, it does reduce their fears a little bit.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think it's always nervous the first time you send money somewhere. You know, obviously we have segregated client accounts, so they're sending money to their own account with a regulated high street entity that they know. But even so, you know, I do understand that fear, and it's not irrational. It's a normal fear to have. So we need to be understanding of that and help clients through that period.
Sam, I was just wondering, you know, when you got an investor thinking about starting out, what would you suggest some of the things that they should think about before getting going in the stock market?
I would suggest that they think about, you know, affording what can they afford, and making sure that it's affordable. I was going to say previously, and making sure they can do little and often, and making sure they can stick to it, because sticking to it over that period is important. Every so often, I would nudge it up. So, for example, if you started with £100 a month, after the end of year one, maybe nudge it up to 105, and then year two, 110, etc., just to keep nudging it up a little bit. So those investments rise with inflation. I would think in terms of investing, broad diversity, so global diversification, sector, regions, and keep the cost low. So pick a fund that has very low costs and just tracks markets. And then I would think about, you know, I wouldn't say don't watch it, because it's very hard to say that to people, especially in this day and age where everything's available at the click of a button. But I would say is, be careful about being too invested in it. And what I mean by that is, don't let it take over. So know that this is for your future self. So if you are 25, this is for your 55-year-old self. And your 55-year-old self will be very pleased that you have put away £100 a month over 30 years, and it's now worth £400,000 or whatever that number is. So that is really what I would say, is those kind of things is keep your costs low. Set something that's affordable that you can stick to, and know that it's paying your future self.
Which would you say is the best way of investing when it comes to sort of starting out? You know, you've kind of got this idea that you could put a big, you know, you've got this amount of money that you want to invest. You could put this chunk of money into the stock market, but you might be nervous that you're sort of investing at the wrong point. So do you think lump sum is the way to go, or do you think drip feeding your money into the stock markets is a good approach?
Yeah, really good question. I think, again, it's a prudent question, because people say, well, the market's at the top, so do I want to invest now? The market's at the bottom, do I want to invest now? The market isn't doing anything, do I want to invest now? And that, all of those questions bring different elements of market timing into the equation. Now, what we normally do is we look at the data, and data tells us that in about 80% of times, lump sum investing actually beats dollar cost averaging. And so when we dollar cost average, we buy in monthly or periodically over a period of time. And that smooths out the returns, because you're buying at different stages of the market. So that's fine to do that. But if you lump sum invest and just put your money in on day one, again, when we talk about the rolling periods, the stock market is up more often than not in any 1 year period, then you will have that return from day one. So lump sum investing does beat dollar cost averaging, unless you invest right at the just before the very worst periods of market declines.
So it's the fact that this 75% figure that you were saying in a single year, the most of that year is up. And presumably then it's that length of time as well. It's the fact that you're sort of going in there for the maximum amount of time that actually produces the best returns. But if you're a little bit nervous about dipping your toe in the stock market, then maybe when you described it as dollar cost averaging, that kind of drip feeding could reduce some of those anxieties.
It definitely does reduce those anxieties. And again, we would help a client through that period if we felt it was going to help them sleep at night, because that, you know, that trumps everything, making sure clients and people are comfortable with their investing. But if you take, you know, if we take now as a good example, so the markets this year are down, you know, it's a temporary decline as always, and they're going to come back. We don't know when. People at the moment are saying, well, should I invest now? Because it might go down further. Now, what will happen is if they don't invest now, if the markets go down further, they'll then say, are they going to go down even further? And that gives them another problem. If they go up, they say, oh, well, now they've gone back up, I'm going to wait till they go down. And again, it's a mental game that they're playing with themselves about how and when to invest. So really, we want to take away that timing element and trying to outsmart the market. If you're making a decision for a 20 or 30 year investment, you know, whether it's, you know, ideally it's down, you know, significantly, and then you can buy in at the bottom, but no one ever knows when the bottom is. So I think we want to take those mental models away from clients and just do what we think is best for them over the longer term.
Okay, let's get on to, you know, sort of what we're experiencing at the moment, and that's this idea of down markets. You know, if a market contracts 20% or more, it's called a bear market, and if it goes up 20% or more, then we're in a bull period. So when you look back since 1946, I was having a look at some of these figures, and we've seen the FTSE All Share, so in the UK we've seen 11 bull markets and 10 bear markets since 1946. So these, I mean, bear markets are absolutely part and parcel of stock market investing. Why do we have bear markets? Why do markets go down for periods of time?
Yeah, another good question. You're testing me this morning. I think that there's lots of reasons. The economy goes in cycles. So you have inflationary periods, recessionary periods, expansions, contractions. And that is really what's needed for capitalism to kind of do its work. So businesses that aren't profitable, or businesses that are being run in a not great manner, let's say, for want of a better phrase, you know, these businesses need to sort of shake themselves out. And that is what the market does. Now, when you're going through an expansion, there's overexuberance, and there's people are doing, you know, let's say, silly things like investing in high riskier assets and doing more and more things because they think it's going to go on forever. And then people become scared and they think, actually, this can't go on forever. And then it pulls back and then it changes. And then there's a war in Russia. And, you know, all of these things equate to bear market periods. And that's why they're so common. And everyone feels different. Everyone feels painful. But they all don't last. They all are temporary declines, and you have to see them through. So they're common and they're part of investing. I mean, it's just a way for the market to go through its cycle and to shake out some of the things that aren't so good and move forward with the things that are better.
So they, you know, when we look forward, fully expect that we will experience bear markets again. It is just something that you have to get used to with stock market investing.
It's the guarantee in stock market investing, for sure.
Okay, and what are the behaviours? What do human beings tend to do? I mean, you sort of alluded to it a little bit. But yeah, how do we react when we see bear markets coming along?
So I think, again, if you take over the last couple of years, we've seen some really scary periods. So in COVID, when the markets were, again, down very, very sharply, over 20%, and we were coming into a global pandemic and the world was shutting down, there was a lot of fear. And that is really what happens in most bear markets. People worry that this time is the time that it's not going to come back, and this is going to be a really scary period. And that happened through COVID. And then obviously 2021 was a year of crazy exuberance and the world opening back up and everyone realizing that that wasn't the end of the world and everything did well. And then we have a war in Russia, which hits, you know, supply chains and global markets, and there becomes inflation and everyone is starting to downgrade, you know, their business profit forecasts for the year and what's going to happen. And then that again is a bit of a negative spiral. So the press has been in negative territory for a while, talking about how, you know, quite rightly, rising costs are going to impact people in the UK, and rising interest rates and mortgage rates and everything. And it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So more people are worried because more people are reading worrying headlines and worrying articles, and that filters into their investments into the stock market. So the stock market is down and people are logging in and seeing their money, and they're thinking that they've lost that money. So again, if we use a round number, if they had £100 invested and it was now £78, that's not a nice feeling. Now, in that context, it's only £22. It's not the be-all and end-all. But if you add some zeros to that, it becomes real money, and it becomes real pain when you see that your investments are down that amount of money. You need to contextualize it, because, again, it's time in the market. So they will come back, and it's only a temporary decline, as I said before. So you need to be very careful in the wording that you use, because if you take that money out, you crystallize that loss. You actually make a loss, whereas whilst it's still invested, it's just temporarily declined, excuse me.
So it's just a paper loss, and the worst thing you could do, presumably, is to click sell and crystallize that loss.
Exactly that.
What would you say is the best way of dealing, you know, in that situation? As you say, investors are deciding that they don't want to be in riskier things. They're dumping those riskier assets like shares, and you're seeing your funds that are invested in the stock market going into the red. What would be your strategy at that moment in time if you were an investor looking at that?
Yeah, so I think from my perspective, an advantage that we have is, you know, we do a lot of research, and we're obviously speaking to clients about their money and what's happening in the world, and listening and learning, and listening to people with, you know, far bigger companies than I have, managing far more clients and bigger numbers than I do. So we have the benefit of that research, and we have the benefit of the data. And I always fall back onto the data, and that helps give me comfort that, you know, this time is not going to be different. And we have seen this before. We've seen inflation, we've seen wars, and, you know, stock market is a very good place to have inflation proof return. So, you know, we fall back on that, and we try and help our clients through those periods. Now, if I sit in the position of my clients, if they haven't been through this before, then they're going to worry. You know, if they're reading that, you know, they're reading headlines from a newspaper that next year, you know, there's going to be blackouts in the UK and all of these types of things that I don't think will come to fruition, I can understand exactly where their worries are. And like I said before, they're not irrational. They're rational worries. They're thinking about their future. They're thinking about, you know, where are they going to get their income from? How are they going to afford X, Y, Z? And so we have to have empathy, and we have to have understanding, but we have to lead with the data and the knowledge that we've got. That's all we can do, is keep clients calm and try and help them through those periods as much as we can. It's all you can do. You have to have faith in the future as an investor.
Okay, then. So I suppose from a more sort of applied approach, you know, if you were looking at those investments, would you add to the positions? Would you say that it's a wise idea to do that, given that, you know, you're basically buying the same assets as yesterday, but they're just a lot cheaper?
Yeah, exactly that. I think in an ideal world, everyone would be picking these assets up at cheaper prices and thinking, right, this is a great time, the markets are on sale, I'm going to invest. It's not as easy as that. Everything is obviously dependent on people's circumstances. So we work with quite a lot of young clients, and a young client in financial services is anything from 18 to probably 45. So it's a broad definition of young, but we help a lot of people who are just putting money away on a monthly basis. They're doing that dollar cost averaging that we were talking about before. For those clients, just keep buying. That's the mantra. For anyone who's sitting on a lot of cash and wants to maybe put money to work, it's a great time to invest. And we'll be having conversations to say, look, now is a good time. You were going to invest 6 months ago, but now everything's 20% cheaper. Let's put some money to work. So that's okay. And for those that have already got investments, you know, if they have additional money, great. If not, they have to sit and stay tight and make sure that they are comforted through that period, like I said before. So all of these things are a little bit based on what the individual person has and where they are and what they're doing and what income requirement. You know, it's a broad spectrum of what we can do, and it's based on where they are at that point in time.
I want to now just draw you to a sort of final point, really. And that's it's very much to do with this. And it's to do with some data that we have calculated with Alliance Trust. And it's what we call the impatience tax. So, you know, thinking about when you're looking at markets that are volatile and you don't want to panic and sell some of your investments. Well, we looked at a couple of investors, one who we called the patient investor, who, you know, sat tight and didn't do anything and rode those periods out. And then one we called the impatient investor, which sold a little bit of their holdings when markets were falling. So we looked at two investors investing £10,000 30 years ago. Each of them were adding £100 each month, and they were reinvesting their dividends. The impatient investor sold a quarter of their holdings, so 25% of their holdings, when the market dropped 5%. So they saw a little bit of panic in the market, and they sold a quarter of their holdings. And then when it recovered a bit, so they were convinced that the market, you know, was now on a bit of an upward trajectory. So when it recovered 10%, they then bought back those holdings again. Meanwhile, the patient investor did nothing. Now, when you look at the difference after 30 years of the two portfolios, it's quite remarkable. The impatient investor would have around £238,000 in that portfolio, whereas the patient one would have had £421,000. So that's the difference of it's incredible, isn't it? A difference of £183,000. Sorry, and this is investing in Alliance Trust, by the way. So a sort of a big, broad, global investment trust. What do you think of that, Sam?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. It's kind of, as I said before, when you talk about the compound effect, that is it in a nutshell. And that difference of £183,000 is absolutely huge. It's nearly double. And that's only a small mistake that impatient investor made. So we see, these things quite often. And we often talk about, you know, the compound effect and how important it is and how big things can grow with relatively small iterations over a 20 or 30 year period. So that isn't a massive surprise to me. But yeah, always great to have a reaffirmation of some of the things I've been saying on the pod.
Well, that's it. Just that tiny mistake, that 25% of your portfolio there, and look at the difference between the two. Okay, well, I think on that note, a very big thank you to Sam Slomer for joining me on this special pod today. Next time, in the last episode of this mini-series with Alliance Trust, we're going to speak to a younger millennial investor who's just starting out with investing, to find out what's drawn them to the stock markets and whether the points that Moira and Sam have made over the series are likely to change their behaviour. Of course, if you've got any questions, please don't hesitate to drop me a line at marcus@stepstoinvesting.com. Until then, goodbye.